Curtis Lewa.
Two young people decided to form their own organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets. When you see them, you get a nice, secure feeling in your heart.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Sliwa from WABC Radio.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New Yorker.
Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa. What happened today? Why? And what's next? Live, local, on it. 77 WABC.
Now I know it wasn't love. It wasn't love. It was a perfect illusion. Mistaken for love.
7 minutes after the hour of 5 on this, the drive home at 5. What happened to Lady Gaga? This is supposed to be her new recovery song, Perfect Illusion. Perfect to discuss Hillary Rodham Clinton, but I think her little monsters are going to be very disappointed. I mean, I was playing Lady Gaga as entry and exit songs on AM radio back in 2008 when she really just, like, hit the stage and exploded. Bad Romance, Telephone, Poker Face, Just Dance. It's a Perfect Illusion. It's low budget. It sucks. But it might be the theme song for what Hillary Rodham Clinton has been going through in terms of what exactly is her health like. What is her medical situation? It seems like we've gone through a little bit of a perfect illusion if we believe what Hillary says. There she was. She was diagnosed with walking pneumonia on Friday, but chose just to bust through it, try to take it to the max, collapse there at the 9/11 commemoration, and then everything else has followed. In fact, this is what she said yesterday as she was adhering to a doctor's advice and getting bed rest at the Love Shack in Chappaqua as she spoke to Anderson Cooper on CNN.
Can you say how many times over the course of the last, say, 5 years you've been dehydrated and gotten dizzy? I know you passed out, hit your head back in 2012, which led to the concussion. How often has this happened?
Oh, I think really only twice that I can recall. You know, it is something that has occurred a few times over the course of my life, and you know, I'm aware of it.
And on the line to discuss it, Michael Cohn, national political columnist for the Boston Globe and author of American Maelstrom, the 1968 election, the politics of division. Thanks for joining us again, Mike, on the Drive Home at 5. Do we have Mike there?
I'm here.
Okay, I think we may have to reconnect with you. It's a little foggy, but let's push forward. Mike, this recent healthcare situation involving Hillary, I'm looking at editorials that generally have been quite favorable towards her from the New York Newsday, the New York Times, others are suggesting she's got to be more transparent. There's got to be more public acknowledgement of what is it that's ailing her.
You know, I got to say, I find this kind of ridiculous. I mean, she had pneumonia. I don't know that there's necessarily a responsibility to put out a press release saying you have pneumonia. And I think, look, she's damn if she does and damn if she doesn't. Because if she does put out the fact that she has pneumonia, you know as well as I do that the Clinton health truthers who think she has some kind of neurological disorder are going to use this as a way to say that she's got health issues. I get the impulse not to put it out there. I'm not so sure that it's information that has to be out there. It's not like pneumonia is a incredibly serious illness that has long-term ramifications. Take some antibiotics and you're fine. I think that the transparency thing is a little hard to swallow, especially when you've got a candidate you're running against who, you know, hasn't put out his tax returns, hasn't put out his medical records except for this letter that this clownish doctor put out. So it's hard to take it seriously, frankly.
Well, let me take you back because it was in your neck of the woods. It was at the time that Willie Horton surfaced in the ads against the miracle governor of Massachusetts, Michael Dukakis, as Bush 41 was running against him. I remember it was unprecedented. Both doctors of both candidates were sitting on a stage with a doctor who was independent and autonomous. And they had about an hour-long conversation for the public to sort of listen to about the health of both of their patients who were presidential candidates. Don't you think it almost behooves us now to have some kind of independent panel of different doctors who can do a workup of both candidates and tell us independently and autonomously, not with the mad scientists for Trump says, or now the many doctors for Clinton, that, you know, it's like your doctor shop, but people who are independent and give it to us straight.
You know, I have no problem with more transparency on this issue. I mean, I do think, you know, a lot of the Clinton partisans sort of said that this was an unfair issue to be focusing on. But, you know, Hillary Clinton is 68 years old. You know, her health is a serious concern, a serious issue, and there should be more investigation. I have no problem with independent panels looking at that, as long as people's, you know, privacy is protected. But I think you can't look at the story without using the larger context of what people like Rudy Giuliani and others have been saying, making up, I should say, about Clinton's health issues. And so I think, you know, this story kind of, I don't think would be as big an issue if not for the fact that people making, you know, completely fact-free, spurious claims about her health. And I think without that, you know, they probably do put out that she's got pneumonia. There probably isn't a big issue about that. I think that is the context here that's sort of being ignored in the story.
You know, it's interesting. The latest is that, like, Saddam Hussein had body doubles. Apparently, there are some who think that Hillary has a body double out there.
I mean, I've heard this, and it's like, you know, with the Clintons, it's every possible conspiracy theory you can imagine. So I'm sure it'll only be a matter of weeks before Trump starts claiming that there is a body double out there.
All right, speaking of Donald Trump, he responded to Hillary Clinton's deplorable comments that were made at the fundraiser in which Barbara Streisand was entertaining the contributors on Friday night. This is what the Donald had to say last night at his rally in North Carolina.
Her comments displayed the same sense of arrogance and entitlement that led to violation of federal law as Secretary of State, hide and delete her emails, put classified information in the reach of our enemies, lie to Congress, and sell government favors and access through her foundation.
Now, when she made the comment about deplorables, the very next day she apologized. Do you think that was the right position to take for her?
You know, the thing is that you never want to be in a situation where you're attacking voters or criticizing voters, and I get that. And I think using the half, you know, half the voters are deplorable and half are not is a tough sell. But, you know, it's important to look at what she said. I mean, she actually was saying something about being more sympathetic toward Trump supporters, saying that we should listen to some of their concerns, but also recognizing the fact, and look, this is undeniable, that you know, more than half of Trump supporters have expressed support for positions that are racist, that are xenophobic, that are misogynistic. This is a fact. You know, and I think, you know, to me, I personally have a hard time, and I think maybe Hillary's being a little too generous, because I got a hard time separating, you know, somebody from the fact that you're supporting Trump, you're supporting somebody who's running very clearly on a racist and nativist platform, who has made racist and nativist statements throughout this campaign. He made one yesterday about Elizabeth Warren. He called her Pocahontas, a racial slur that nobody even seems to care about anymore. I think the voters who are supporting Trump and who are accepting the fact that he is taking these positions have to be held accountable for it. And so, you know, Hillary Clinton is the wrong messenger, I think, probably for that argument. But I think we should be talking more about that. I mean, it is a really, you know, big problem that, you know, more the majority of white Americans are going to vote for a candidate who's basically a racist.
All right, but Michael Cohen, just from a pragmatic common sense point, with 2 months left in this sprint to November 8th, if in fact this becomes the discourse, the one group you have to convince, you have to sell them on the free agents out there. And these are the independent voters. I'm not talking about the 10% who are in favor of Gary Johnson, the Libertarian Party candidate, or the 4% for Stein, the Green Party. I'm talking the truly free agents. They seem of late to be breaking towards Trump. Don't you think if you keep pounding on Trump supporters that they're racist or xenophobes or sexist or misogynists or homophobes, that's just going to bring over more independent voters, truly independent voters, to the Trump camp?
To be honest with you, I think it helps her more than it hurts her. If you look at the numbers, you know, Trump isn't really building a lot of support. What's happening is voters are moving away from Clinton into the undecided category. And I think one way to get those voters on board, back on board, is to remind them exactly who her opponent is. And I got to tell you, I personally don't think there are many voters out there who are deciding between Hillary and Trump. I think there are a lot of voters who are thinking about staying home, voters thinking for a third-party candidate. I'm hard-pressed to believe that there's a lot out there who truly are torn between these two candidates. And I think, you know, if you're Clinton, you, the biggest thing you want to do is get your voters out. If she gets her base of voters out, she wins, because this is, you know, by and large, the map favors Democrats. And so I think reminding people about the, you know, the kind of support that the Trump is getting is beneficial to her. And you've seen now, last 2 days or so, that, you know, Mike Pence, other Republicans have had a hard time dealing with the fact that, like, you know, what do you say about Donald Trump? David Duke, Pence didn't want to call him deplorable. You know, he puts him in a bind when this kind of conversation is happening, because the fact is that Trump is being supported by a lot of people who have pretty deplorable views.
I appreciate that, Michael Cohen of the Boston Globe. It is interesting. I've had walking pneumonia, which is exactly what Hillary has been diagnosed with this past Friday by her doctor. And it can fool you. It can trick your mind. One day you figure, oh, I'm not sweating. I don't have fevers. I don't have chills. I don't have the shakes. Boy, I guess I've shaked it. And then the very next day, they come back with a vengeance. So it's a roller coaster ride, walking pneumonia. And it doesn't just disappear in 3 days or a week. Sometimes it can linger for a month or more. And in a very heated presidential campaign, which this is, now that it's really tightened up, Hillary's going to have to pace herself. And that means I think we're going to see more Barack Obama out on the campaign trail like we saw today in Philadelphia. We may see the Madam First Lady come on out, Michelle Obama. Almost every Democrat who's ever been registered as any kind of name of significance will probably have to hit the trails to make up for what will have to be a void of not having as much Hillary as in the past, because I don't think with walking pneumonia, she's going to be up to the task.
Curtis Sliwa, the deepest knowledge of the city. The Drive at 5, 77 WABC.
That's it! Payback! Revenge! I'm mad! Get down!
527. Oh, and revenge was in the air in the West Farm section of the Bronx. You had an 86-year-old grandma who said, that's it, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, back-to-back, belly-in-belly. She had been ripped off of $100 in her purse by some miscreant, some cretin with chromosome damage who decided to snatch that pocketbook and go at about 2:30 on Sunday. Now, if you remember, this followed the case that happened a few days before in East Harlem at the convenience store, where an elderly Dominican woman, 93 years old, the same age as my mother, was in a wheelchair with her home care attendant, and she had just gone to the bank, took out $600. That's what she lived on for the month. And that hipster lookalike, remember, he just reached into a brassiere, he snatched the money and ran. Thankfully, he was bagged and tagged. I would have taken a ball-peen hammer, taken his hand, put it on a curb, and broken every knuckle in his hand and let him walk around with a cast for a while. But she was a Jehovah Witness, and she said, no, 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 I believe in forgiveness, I believe in turning the cheek. But that was totally different from the 86-year-old black grandmother who had only words of anger for the woman who snatched her pocketbook.
My pocketbook's like this.
You okay?
And she grabbed my pocketbook. I said, bring my pocketbook back. And so I get out of my wheelchair to try to run after her.
And naturally, she wasn't able to do so. And then she got even more animated.
She said hello, and I said hello. She said, and it's a beautiful day, isn't it? And then she grabbed my bag. She said, it's going to be even beautiful now for me. So I said, come back here with my bag. Come back here with my bag. And she said something that was derogatory, and she kept on running.
Oh, yeah. In fact, the miscreant, the cretin with chromosome damage, the enemy of society, turns back to the woman who's stumbling out of the wheelchair, a woman who at one time was a track star herself. And she goes, you can't touch this, like MC Hammer. She goes, go ahead, try to catch me, try to catch me. So she's jabbering away at the elderly woman who obviously couldn't pursue her. And then the 86-year-old black grandmother says what this money was for.
It's money I work for.
And then she said, you know, if I was in better shape.
And if I wasn't in this wheelchair, I would have caught up and put my foot up in it.
And then, the most positive of all positives, taking a leaf out of the book of Charles Bronson in Death Wishes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 or more.
I want to get a gun and shoot her damn brains out.
Damn right. High five. See, that's Old Testament. Meantime, she says that she wants to sign up for a permit to carry. Now, who down at One Police Flash? I know you're all listening down there because you have a Curtis Sliwa drive home at five desk, because at times I am very critical of your leadership at One Police Plaza. Who would deny her the opportunity to actually get a gun and while sitting there in the wheelchair, just like pop a few shots at this fleeing cretin who had the gall to turn back after she had snatched a pocketbook and says, "You can't touch this. Go ahead, try to catch me." Wouldn't it have been great if Grandma could have pulled out even a .22 or a .38 or a .357 Magnum and just pop her? And what jury? What jury? Go ahead, assemble a jury in the Bronx, because you know the DAs would have brought her up on a murder charge. It wouldn't have mattered. If it was Cyrus White Shoes Vance, you know, the product of nepotism in Manhattan. If it was the ambulance chaser out in Staten Island. If it was Duck Down D.A. Brown. Is he still alive? Can you do me a favor, Justin? Make yourself useful. Duck Down D.A. Brown is so old. He's like a cadaver in formaldehyde. He lives in Connecticut, and yet he's still the D.A. in Queens. And the woman judge in the Bronx, who basically swapped out with Robert Johnson, one inept, dysfunctional person for another. I'd like to see them charge a person in that capacity, an elderly person trying to protect their savings from an enemy of society who snatches and runs. Like we saw in East Harlem, where the victim had a New Testament attitude, and where we saw in West Farm section of the Bronx, where the elderly grandma said, "Oh, no, no, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth." Give her that carry permit. Give her that carry permit today.
Connections.
I really think it's free speech.
Deep understanding.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
Secret agent man, secret agent man. They've given you a number. I haven't taken away your name.
I'm 40 on the Drive Home at 5. I was blown away today by a story in the New York Star Ledger. Talked about how right before the start of the school year, you remember it was hot, it was humid, it was sweaty. As the custodians and the supers got into the school to prepare it for the first school day, teachers getting their lesson plans together, principals getting ready to welcome back the students, making sure all the administrative paperwork was in effect. But there was an unusual amount of organizing that had nothing to do with any of those subjects I've just discussed. In fact, in the days leading to the start of the new school year, some administrators in some school districts were also having their schools swept for spy cameras. I never heard of that before. Schools being swept for spy cameras. On the line to discuss that is Jimmy Messis, who's editor-in-chief and publisher of PI Magazine. Thanks for joining us here on the Drive Home at 5, Jimmy.
Thank you, Curtis. Pleasure to be on the show with you.
Jimmy, explain to me, boy, the problem must have gotten pretty bad that all of a sudden some school administrators who oftentimes are not thinking about cameras, hidden cameras in their school systems, are all of a sudden contracting people in your industry to come in and sweep the area to see if anyone is trying to perv out on people?
One of the problems, Curtis, is that there's been a lot of publicity, not just in New Jersey and New York, but around the country, where hidden cameras have been found in the showers, locker rooms, bathrooms, underneath teachers' desks. And what's interesting is the people that actually put those cameras in there are usually either custodial help or school administrators, actual officials of the school that have keys to the school and have plenty of time to set up their toys for their voyeuristic enjoyment.
Is it just that they're perverts, or is it to try to monitor activity because there are kleptomaniacs around, things all of a sudden that are missing in action in the course of a 24-hour school day?
Curtis, this is all perverts. These are all individuals that are looking to get hidden voyeuristic video. And what's more sickening than anything else is that most of the people that are doing it are like 99% men. But what always surprised me when we find that they get arrested is that they're not videotaping young girls or the ladies, that a lot of these men are trying to get video of the boys. And that was what was most shocking for me.
Okay, so you come in as an expert, a PI. You got all the equipment that can vet out the placement of these hidden cameras. What happens when you find the cameras? How does the school deal with it? And does the criminal justice system ever get involved with it?
It does. There have been situations where we were brought in and got involved in a school district where there was a tip that there was a hidden camera videotaping boys in the shower. They found the tape. We were able to locate where the camera actually was and where it was purchased. That person is now enjoying the facilities of a federal prison, a state prison, should I say. And sometimes it's just proactive. The schools want to make sure that they're doing something proactively to make sure that there's no hidden cameras, especially now at the beginning of the school year. I'm actually sitting in a school parking lot right now getting ready to do a sweep, and I've got another one for tomorrow. So this is something that's more common than people would imagine.
Where do you usually find these hidden cameras when you do a sweep of a school?
Normally, you're going to find them in the showers, locker room area, especially for the after-school sports, let's say football, wrestling. They're the ones that are usually going to take a shower. You know, when we were young and we took physical ed in high school or what have you, we used to take a shower after our gym class, what have you. Kids don't take showers in schools anymore. In fact, a lot of the schools use the showers as storage rooms. But for the football, soccer, wrestling, where they get dirty, they get all sweaty, they do take showers, and that's the target area where we look for.
All right, so normally where you start snapping towels at one another, there may be a hidden camera snapping pictures of you snapping the towels at the genital parts of your adversary.
Yeah, and the problem is that the cameras right now are so small where you can have a camera hidden, let's say, in the head of a Phillips head screw that's behind a metal panel, and it looks like a typical screw, but little do you know that in the center of the hex is a pinhole camera that's pointing at whoever the target area is going to be.
Now, in addition to just schools, there are a lot of other freaky-deaky kind of people out there who like to film everything they do, including their sexual encounters against the will of their partner. Have you come across instances where guys will just plant that equipment, even like in the boudoir that they share with their wife?
Yeah, it's common. In fact, we do quite a bit of that. Matrimonial-type suites. Let's say a couple's getting divorced, the husband leaves the house, and we find that the husband wanted to still keep track of his soon-to-be ex-wife, so he'll install a hidden camera or a microphone with a transmitter, and he's got the receiver at a buddy's house next door or around the corner, or they put GPS trackers on the car so they can keep following the spouse to know when they're around. I mean, because the cost of this equipment is so cheap, we're talking $100 or less, and you can get it on eBay, Amazon, anywhere online, it's very affordable, and it's like an epidemic. It's happening. We're busy almost every day.
So let me get this straight, Jimmy Messis, editor-in-chief, publisher of PI Magazine. In addition, if you were in a marriage, let's say hypothetically I was married, I've been married four times, so I'm into a fifth marriage, and I got a slice on the side of Gumada. My worst nightmare is either my wife looking to stalk me or a guy like you hiding in the bushes with all kinds of this technology ready to vet me out.
Yeah, they're out there, but the equipment's very expensive. The number of people that do professional bug sweeps, let's say in the New Jersey, New York metropolitan area, there's only about a half a dozen guys. The equipment is about over $150K to do the job properly. And you have to have the right training, hundreds of hours of training at the manufacturer facility to learn how to use the equipment. So it's not that simple, and there really aren't that many people doing the sweeps properly.
Well, certainly do appreciate that. I don't know if I gave you any relief out there, guys, who are on the make, but there's cameras everywhere. I mean, every time a crime is committed, we expect to see on Eyewitness News at night video. If we don't see video, we're disappointed. And I guess in divorce court and family court, judges are looking at more video than they ever viewed before, saying, holy mackerel, you did what?
The Drive at 5. On the air, on the app. Curtis Sliwa. Live, local, on it. 77 WABC.
Oh, I love trash. Anything dirty or dingy or dusty.
Hey, isn't this Sesame Anything Street's Oscar the Grouch? They haven't furloughed him yet. Put them on the shelf, whatever. I do love trash. As you know, I recycle everything. And as a kid, I wanted to be a sanitation man so desperately. But let's put that aside. That's not what this intro song was about. There are two organizations that are probably the most inept of all of our local statewide government. First, there is the DOE, Department of Education, dumbest organization ever. There's no doubt about that. They are the Board of Education of the city of Newark. And then there's the MTA, the money-taking agency. Now, they have a board that's appointed by Andrew Evilize Cuomo, King Cuomo II, the son of Mario Faccia Bruta Cuomo, King Cuomo I, and Comrade Bill de Blasio. And they are dysfunctional, and they are inept. Most of them, they don't take the buses or the trains that they oversee. And some of these schmucks and putzes came up with a brilliant idea 4 years ago. At least they thought they were brilliant. Remove the garbage cans from the subway platforms. And they said, look, this will be behavioral modification. If you don't have a subway trash can on the platform, they will force the person carrying the trash to carry a topside and to find a can or maybe even carry it to work. Now, are you a putz or a schmuck? And so last year, you had the Mamaluk, the Mashad, the state controller, Tom DiNapoli, who goes, well, we're not quite sure if this works. Anybody who's been in a subway knows that you can see the rats doing the Harlem Shuffle and the Crip Dance on the platforms because there's so much garbage. So now all of a sudden the money-taking agency has a new program called Operation Track Sweep. It began today as the agency looks to remove the trash from the tracks around the entire subway system, much of it being discarded by passenger strap hangers because there are no trash cans on the platforms. Now, you think it would have made common sense just to keep the trash cans on the platforms and have them serviced by the maintenance man of the MTA, the money-taking agency. But will they apologize? Will they say, Curtis Sliwa, you were right 4 years ago and others with common sense? The answer is no. It's on to the next mess up at the MTA, money-taking agency.